Good afternoon. I'm Steve Kowaleski with the State of Pennsylvania, a CDC assignee, and I'm going to talk about the PA NEDS system. Of all the systems here, PA NEDS is probably the most senior system. It actually started, it was actually conceived probably right before the events of 9/11. We were actually working on it when the events of 9/11 occurred, and there was a major milestone in the development of our PA NEDS system. I'm going to give you guys a retrospective look. I'm not going to talk too much about hardware or software, but the big picture. PA NEDS, what is it? We have lots of sources of information coming into it, physicians, hospitals, laboratories, and we have a lot of customers that are using the system, local health departments, investigators, central office, and, of course, the CDC. So lots going in and lots going out. PA NEDS, it did replace the card-based system that we had prior to PA NEDS. It was actually a paper-based system that we used STDMIS to transfer the information from the cards into the STDMIS system. Right now, PA NEDS is a combination of a bunch of programs, including TB, sexually transmitted diseases, infectious diseases, lead, HIV partner services, and HIV surveillance. So they're all integrated in the system. It is a patient-centric system, and that common patient is the core of the system. One of the things that's interesting about PA NEDS is that from inception, when we were sitting down and putting pen to paper of what the system might look like, is that we decided that we had to have a reporting law to say, thou shall use it, because if you didn't have that law behind it, we were fearful that providers simply would not report into the system. So from inception, we developed PA code that said that a provider and laboratories must use this system as a primary mechanism for reporting. Right now, we have over 2.5 million reports in the system, either via HL7 or CSV. We're receiving reports from all the programs that you see below. Minimum system requirements, from a provider perspective, from a laboratory perspective, it's not real robust. Basically, you have to have a T1 connection or DSL broadband, about a gigabyte of RAM, and about 500 megabytes of hard drive space on your computer. And we ask that individuals use Windows Internet Explorer 7 or higher. So it's not real computer intensive from the user's perspective. The benefits of PA NEDS, well, we do have an integrated health alert network system built right into it. It does reduce reporting cycle times, time reported to initiation to follow-up. It facilitates data sharing between programs. And that's been a big help, especially as we look at co-infection among syphilis and HIV. It also has improved completeness of disease reporting. And it also has been a significant reduction in data entry staff. In the STD program in itself, we went from 3 full-time employees down to a 0.5 full-time employee for data entry. Now, although we have a state law that says that thou shall use PA NEDS to report, in reality, we're still getting paper-based reports in the system. We probably, by ratio, probably about a 90-10 split. 90% is electronic, 10% is still paper. And you know what? When I retire, it'll still be 10% paper, because there are some providers that will never have internet access. It's just a fact of life. We talked about it is patient-centric. It is web-based user interface. We encourage both clinician and laboratory disease reporting, but in reality, it's a laboratory-based reporting system. Providers are only really entering the system to document treatment. It is an integrated electronic laboratory reporting system, and we have morphed that system over time, going from a common delimited CSV-type file format now to HL7. The disease questions that we have for each condition are based on the CDC-mandated questions in the various interview records that we have. And we do have a really robust analysis and reporting environment. The thing about PA NEDS is that we have many, many sources of information coming into the system, and as a result, deduplication of clients is a really big issue, because you may have a laboratory entering the patient, the physician, a hospital, and guess what? Each of them is going to have a slight permutation on the name and the date of birth. So we spend an incredible amount of time deduplicating patients. But on the same hand, our system is also very sensitive because we're getting reports from many sources on that same client. We try to reuse the system where we could across program areas because it is patient-centric. So when you enter a patient for demographics, it doesn't matter if you're entering for HIV, TB, or STD, the same demographic screen appears for all those clients. So there's consistency there. Data flow, the order which data was entered does vary from program to program, so we can rearrange the screens based on our program area on how the system should be used. But they are essentially the same screens. PA NEDS is highly functional, but it's also very complex. Instituting change is very complex, time-consuming, and very costly. So when CDC or another partner comes by and says, can you just add this question to your questionnaire? The question is just, can you just add this question to it? They don't realize that it's going to take a year to do that, enormous amount of staff time, and an enormous amount of money to do that change. The core systems require significant buy-in from other PA nodes program areas. So if we make a change in STD that affects the demographic screen, we have to get buy-in from the other programs. Significant increases in time is also spent on assuring data quality and integrity. So we moved our staff from doing data entry now to data assurance and data quality. Patient deduplication is a really big issue. Can't stress it enough because we're getting so many sources of information there. We have approximately 16 different manual and automated algorithms to identify and merge patients in the system. Investigation management and merge functions and ELR monitoring are also part of that data quality assurance and integration. So I have this screen up here, and I feel kind of like a dad with this system because I was there from conception all the way to where we are today. So PA NEDS had some distinct life cycles. It started off as a baby in 2002, and you know, we all have dog cycles in our, 7 years equals a human year. Well, in surveillance in the PA NEDS system, it's about 1 year to every 10 human years. So right now, where are we in PA NEDS? Well, we're probably a senior citizen now at 2011. The system has aged. It went from a baby to retirement, or approaching retirement now in 2011. One of the lessons that we learned is that as we were developing PA NEDS, we really didn't have time to catch our breath and think what was the big picture 10 years out. We were so engrossed in developing a system, getting it functional, that we kind of missed the mark on that issue. So here we are in 2012, and we really need a strategic plan to say, where do we go next? What happens next? Also thinking about it, when NEDS started, the world has changed radically. You know, back in 2002, nobody knew what a smartphone was. We thought maybe it was a touch tone phone rather than a rotary phone. Back in 2002, nobody knew what Lady Gaga was. Now look at we are today. In 2002, nobody knew what a tablet was. We thought it was something you would write in. And now tablets are part of our mainstay computing history. So if we had time to think of a strategic plan and where the ball was going, perhaps in 2011, we would know where NEDS was going now. Some other general observations, NEDS is not a speedboat. We cannot make changes on the dime. And oftentimes our national partners will say, can you just do this? Oh, and by the way, we need it implemented by June. It just won't happen that way. NEDS is more like a super tanker. We have to make minor course corrections along the way. And those course corrections have to be planned out and thought through. The other thing with PA NEDS is that the funding is drying up. Most of PA NEDS was supported by bioterrorism dollars. Those dollars are drying up. We really do not have a strategic plan in place of where NEDS is going to go in 12, 13, 14, 15. Other things about PA NEDS, we tried to make it a physician laboratory-centric system so those users would use the system. It's physicians can designate others to report on their behalf. They can submit disease reports to both the local and state offices simultaneously. They have the ability to edit reports, but once they hit that button of committing, the report is out of their hands, and they can no longer do any additional edits to the system. They can submit additional reports for existing patients without having to re-enter all the patient details. So they can call the demographics up, enter a report, and submit it, but once it's submitted, it's done. It's out of their hands. Some lessons learned. One of the big things in our system is that our analysis and reporting environment is not available to the physician community. So if a physician wants to know what's the disease trends in my county, they do not have access to the A&R system behind PA NEDS. And one of the concerns was confidentiality and small set theory. We still haven't really come to terms with that. So providers can't run reports on a real-time basis for their areas. Provider facility deduplication is a big issue. We did a really good job with patient deduplication, but not a really good job in provider deduplication. So what happens is a hospital or a physician is represented 10 or 12 times in the system. It's something that we should have addressed at inception of PA NEDS. The other thing that's kind of odd is that we actually had to slow down our response times to the provider communities. And oftentimes, we were getting the reports before the provider was getting it. So when our DIS were going out and following up, there were some angst among the physicians because we were notifying their clients before they had a chance to look at the report. So we actually had to put some barriers or some slowness into the system to prevent that from happening. Some other lessons that we learned: that once a report is submitted, it can never be recalled by the provider. That's created some issues because sometimes providers make mistakes, and those mistakes have consequences. So when an individual provider reports on a client that this client had chlamydia and they really didn't have chlamydia, you're talking about individuals' lives that could be really messed up. So there was an issue there, and once a report is in the system, it's in there permanently. We can mark it for deletion, but the record's always in the system. Again, I talked about this. Health departments may begin acting on the information too quickly, and as a result, physicians get really prickly about that. And so we had to put some issues in there to actually slow down the process. Accurate data is very important. Reports are only as accurate as the information reported from the laboratories. As a result, we spend an incredible amount of time bringing a laboratory on board to make sure the reports are robust enough and meet the requirements of PA NEDS. I'm going to skip over this. Basically, we have over 700 reporting identities that are using NEDS currently today. And about 85% of our reports are submitted online through the ELR process. About 15% are still coming in either through laboratory entering in online or by paper. This graph real quick, one of the things I want to stress is HL7. The red orange bar has really taken off. HL7 sounds like a standard, but it really isn't. It's just a general message parameter. How laboratories use the HL7 message varies from laboratory to laboratory. So laboratories do not use standard coding schemes. Not all labs use HL7 messaging. And the labs that do use it, they use the segments within that message all differently as well. So each laboratory is really a one-on-one basis in getting them to match into the system so we can bring their ELR reports on board. Again, we're running into issues when these large laboratories farm out to smaller laboratories. A lot of the demographics don't carry over, so when we get the report, it's missing key demographics. We spend a lot of time following up with those secondary laboratories for the demographics that we need to get them into the system. It's also really important when we're talking to laboratories to think of the big picture. In PA NEDS, we're not only interested in all the positive reports, but in some cases, we need those critical negative reports as well. When you have a positive RPR, that's great, but we also need that follow-up negative FTA associated with it, or you're going to be spending a lot of time spinning your wheels for nothing. Our A&R environment, we tried to tailor it to the user's level of experience. We have canned reports in the system, which are low complexity. And in reality, 80% of the users out there want to press a button and get a result. They don't want to do any ad hoc queries or understand your database structures. They want to press a button and get an answer. So we have a lot of reports in there already canned for the user. They press a button. And for 80% of the users out there, that's all they ever wanted to see. Then we have something called multi-dimensional cubes, and that's a moderate complexity. You have to have your head screwed on straight when you're using those because you can filter and cut and slice the data any way you want it, and you can get an answer that looks right, but guess what? It's completely wrong. So we have those multi-dimensional cubes, and I consider them moderate complexity. A lot of training is involved in for that. And then we have something called data sets, which are the actual data sets that you can bring out to SAS and actually manipulate those data sets and get your answers to those questions you might have. And those are really high complexity. And in reality, only about 5% of our users are using those high complexity data sets. So as you think about developing your own system, for ANR, most people, 80% of the users, want to press a button and get an answer. So don't spend a whole bunch of time developing these fancy ANR systems, because most of your users aren't going to be interested in it anyway. One of the lessons that we learned is that we did not integrate GIS capabilities into the system. We geocode all our data, but we don't have a clean user interface ability to generate maps from that data. We had to export the data out and put it into something else to get maps so we can do our data analysis. That's a real quick overview of the system. I said the system has been in existence since 2002. We've gone through 15 iterations. Yeah, 15. And I can't tell you how many dollars we have spent. Just put it this way. It's higher than $10 million. And so NEDS is a great system. It's highly complex, but a lot of money went into the system. And if you're thinking about going into a system, here is the word of warning to you. It is not for the faint of heart. Whatever time you think you're going to spend on doing it, multiply that by a factor of 10. And how many dollars you think you're going to spend developing a system, multiply that by a factor of 100. So don't go in with your eyes closed and think, well, we can do this. You probably can. But it's going to take 10 times more work and 100 times more money than you ever thought was possible. So not to be a discouragement to you, but that's where we really are in developing these systems.
Well, thank you. So thank you to all of the speakers today. I think they brought really great perspectives and very different points of view, but all sort of sharing a lot of valuable information to folks. I want to thank all of you who stayed with us through this whole topic. We do have about 10, 15, well, not quite 15, but about 10 minutes easily to have discussion. And there were many points that were brought up by my colleagues here that I'm saying, oh, yes, Maven does that, it doesn't do this, or how we handle it is a little bit different. And I'm sure most of, the other folks here have, thought of some of the other things as well. So I think it would be great if, folks had questions or wanted to have a discussion, we're all available for that. So please do come talk to us. Well, in the microphone, yeah.
We're talking about confidentiality issues, and I want to say about that. And I'm from Ohio. My name is Tutu. I work in the communities unit, DIS. So in our office, there are different people who work on different diseases. So if I go into what we call the ODRS, Ohio Disease Reporting System, we switch from SDMIS. ODRS has always existed. We just merged. So if I go in and my client has some other disease, I would not see it. It would say, block it out, that new reportable condition. So if other people in my office go in, they would not see HIV or syphilis. It would be blocked out. So how does your system work?
We have something similar. We have, obviously, I think with resources shrinking in a lot of our bigger health departments,
We have something similar in Michigan. In a lot of our bigger health departments, I think there's a dedicated STD person who doesn't need to see communicable diseases. I think the reality now is that that's less true, that there's more and more people that are doing everything. But MDSS has a communicable disease role, a communicable disease TB role, a communicable disease hepatitis role, hepatitis STD. There's multiple combinations of what people can see. So you choose the least what you need to know based on that person. And I think when we first started the system, the health departments were bigger and there were people that had dedicated, oh, I just do this. And the reality is, yeah, in Michigan over time that's shrunk, and so there's a lot more people that are seeing everything now. But in the that functionality is there, role-based functionality.
And from Pennsylvania's perspective, the system always had that information in it. That's another exercise not for the weak of heart, because it took 4 site visits from CDC and probably 200 pages of documentation to allow cross-program access to the HIV side of the database. So if you're planning to go down that road and you have an integrated database and you want to share data, it's not for the faint of heart. I'm telling you that now. A lot of documentation and a lot of work that needs to be done, not from the database perspective, but to get over the different areas and program responsibilities and confidentiality.
Yeah, and
there's also a nurse in a different program, child that was the program. She enters lead levels of children. She's not able to see anything, any communicable disease at all.
Well, in New York, up until recently, we had laws that would prevent, you know, sort of those, that sharing of data. So we had to build our things in, you know, a siloed way. And we've only recently sort of, you know, fixified and allowed, you know, put it on a legislative agenda and asked, you know, can we please share this data for better, you know, case management? And, you know, so that's a barrier that has nothing to do with your systems as to whether or not you can, you know, see other data and do better case management. So there might be some laws in Ohio.
I just like to say one thing, that the technology is exceeded. You can granulate what you can see to the actual value level in the database. Technology is not the issue. As everybody at each conference I attend talk about this integration issue, this moving forward non-siloing, it's not a technology issue whatsoever. That is a business issue that's got to be solved at the local level. And as soon as you can identify who that is, roles, rights, and privileges in the technology side could keep you completely covered. I mean, that we've got to catch up to the technology, actually.
Hi, Susan Beck, New York State Department of Health.
Hi.
We just also built our own STDMIS system. I voted for prison. I advocated to use prison, but we built our own. And I think I'm swimming upstream with one arm tied behind my back. Brad, and I have two questions for you. We're in the process of building an electronic assignment kind of module, you know, key so that we can have supervisors designate to each worker, you know, their caseload, mm-hmm. and so the supervisors can monitor that way. And you said that you're able to put pregnant women and syphilis reactors or positive babies into a separate. How does the system identify that? Because we clearly, we don't want to see a lot of pregnant, it's always the same.
Right.
You know,
right.
And then how does it get to a specific caseworker?
So what I was talking about, as electronic data come into the system, what Maven has are these workflows. And what we did was we programmed these workflows to say, okay, incoming data, look for this, look for this, look for that. And within surveillance, before it goes out to the field, there are 10 or 12 different workflows where, you know, pregnant women with syphilis will come in, all children under 12 with a disease, low priority syphilis, gonorrhea, chlamydia, priority providers, corrections. You know, so we have, you know, so as it's coming in, it gets parsed out to those, and then those folks in surveillance will review them and decide if they need to go out for further investigation. And so then they'll use the workflow mechanism to then send that out to a DIS for further investigation. We do require review. I mean, the amount of, you know, thing, I mean, I'd say the overwhelming majority of the reports that we receive don't require investigation or further activity. So we do have to have, you know, some kind of review before sending it out. Sure.
Yeah, our time constraints are not on data entry. Once you're in a form, you're golden. You're tabbing through. It's tabs and drop downs, and you know you can type A and the A's come up, and that's good. The slowness we have is when you hit submit. There's a hanging there, and then when you open the PDF form, you have to pre-populate that data. So when you hit the button that says activate and it pulls that crosswalk data into any form, there's a timeliness there. I would not, I don't know, I wish my DIS was here and she just left. I don't know, she might say, I wouldn't say it took that long, but I don't do it. So it takes a long time. I would, it's probably closer to yours. It's not 30 seconds, that's for sure. I mean, it's probably several minutes.
Mm-hmm. Anyone wants to hear any stories about time and money, they can tell me about the California system. Not one syphilis case has yet been entered into it. I guess we get a couple of drinks after the session, so I'd be happy to. But, one comment on what you just said. We are entering chlamydia and gonorrhea. Our county partners are entering chlamydia and gonorrhea. It takes five times longer to enter a case into our current web-based system than it did into our, not STD-MIS, but STD-MIS-like system. So the backlog still of 2011 chlamydia cases haven't been entered in. But one point about Pennsylvania having required providers to enter data in, I've actually quoted that, but I think I may have misquoted it to some of my colleagues recently, because in California we have a county system, and at least at this point in time, a lot of the information is being entered in by county staff on case reports, and so it's not relevant for New York City, clearly, but for any of you states, are there issues with having required counties to submit information to the state, and that we're thinking about doing that, because there's a couple counties that don't want to use the system that we built, and with somewhat good reason, but if we could require them to do so, then we would be in better shape. Has that not been an issue with many of the states?
I can talk about that. We require health departments or counties to do this, to do MDSS. We have counties, specifically the city of Detroit, which is like a county in Michigan, who simply can't do it. And they called us and said, we're not doing it. And so, and you know, you can mandate it law, you can do whatever you want, but if they don't have the resources there to do it, whether it's IT or personnel or functionality or what is it, they can't do it. And so we've absorbed that at the central office. So here we've had this web-based system, we're sending it out to the counties, we're like, oh, here, use your data and enter stuff there. And they can't do it, and they won't do it. And so we've relied heavily on adding ER HL7 messaging from the emergency rooms in Detroit, tried heavily to do that. We've developed an HL7 message, which is really a crazy process, but I go and quarterly and pull back-end data out of their clinic lab system. I do crazy things to it and turn it into an HL7 message. So just to get the numbers in there to count the person, you know, and so we've had to accommodate them, and they can't do it, you know what I mean? And I think you're going to run into people, run into places where they say, I'm sorry, we can't do this. And so I think it's good to have a contingency plan.
Three things from Pennsylvania's perspective. When we had on STD-MIS, we put it out on a Citrix server. So by default, the counties had access to the MIS system. So they were kind of hungry for having a centralized system. They saw the advantages of it. Second of all, when we made it a state law that laboratories and providers have to report on it, the counties really didn't have a choice, because if they wanted the information, they had to get into the system. And I say that all the counties in the state of Pennsylvania use PA-NEDS with the exception of one county, and that's Philadelphia. And due to political reasons, Philadelphia is an island unto themselves. And it's created some headaches, frankly, because laboratories and physicians report into NEDS, and then Philadelphia has to take an extract of the system and then re-import into their system. So lessons learned, and I don't want to insult my partners in Philadelphia, but if we had to go back in time, we would have made that bigger an issue.
I think Washington's a little bit different. I think there was some expectation that we get pushback from counties when we transitioned, and it didn't happen. They all use it. I think part of that might have been that they were actually eager to have an electronic system to get away from paper themselves. The system has some functionality in it that's useful to them right away, and that was incentive for them as well. And I think they felt they had a little more control over their cases that way. And also just the laws in Washington, you know, it's reportable to the locals, not to the state, so it has to go through them anyways. We're seeing with budget cuts, more counties aren't able to do the interviewing part, but so far no one said anything about case entry.
Don't you see all this gray hair?
And to Catherine, I have to say how jealous I am that you can, your stuff from the PDF is actually going into your core data. That I don't think going to happen in our program until we have, you know, we're down to the pH or the hour from Stephen's thing. My question is, on any of you guys, any of the programs you have, is there a, I hear about kind of what I would call the surveillance thing and the contact management, what I would call contact.
In New York, we our STD clinic has its own electronic medical record, and in what we're actually working with is because we're lucky enough to be able to have them as part of, you know, the bureau, we're working on ways to have the electronic medical record stuff come into our Maven through messaging as though it was, you know, just another kind of provider. And one of the flexibilities that we have in New York is the ability to add on any new data source that comes available. You know, if some clinic system, not health department, decides that they want to be able to report in, we would be able to accept that.
We have in Michigan a substantial number of our counties adult health, family planning, and STD use Insight. I'm sure a lot of you guys know Insight products. And we've worked with Insight to create a EMR transfer, which takes their EMR into an HL7 message and appends the kind of clinical, the treatment, and the EMR data at the end in a note section. So I don't think that's really what we're talking about when we're talking about integrating EMRs. It's a way for us to prevent them from having to do double data entry into two systems. So it's taking a health record and turning it into a case report form. And so it's kind of a workaround. I don't think it's probably the best solution, but it's what we can do right now. And we feel awful. You know, we would hate for people to purchase an EMR with the promise that it's HL7 compliant or NEDS compliant and then not be able to talk to our system and to require them to enter into both systems.
Could address that, because just went through this with the HIV expanded interview record. It takes us 1 year, but the warning to CDC is give us a standard and don't change it 6 months later and say, oh, by the way, we forgot this, because it throws the entire system into chaos. It just drove me crazy, because we were working on this for a year, and then 6 months into the process, they said, oh, by the way, we forgot something, or we need to change this. What do you do? So we need 1 year from Pennsylvania's perspective.
I have to say that I feel really lucky that we were developing our Maven at the time that CDC put out the comprehensive interview record and the comprehensive field record. And we were able to incorporate those and make those elements in our Maven before you know, we had done it all and then had to go back and change it. But I will say that there are several things that we've wanted to do since we went live. We went live over a year and a half ago, and we still haven't really had a chance for a whole variety of reasons, not so much system related, but to be able to, you know, make those changes. And so, you know, like, because what they impact and, you know, users and training them and testing and, you know, what does one thing, how does that change another? I think a year is easily that long to think about, if not longer sometimes.
In Michigan, we just, on Valentine's Day, we updated, does anyone remember when the new FR and those a couple added variables for the interview record came out? Was that, it was in the fall, October? October? Anyone? No. I think it was in the fall sometime in October, and so we got that done in February. So I think that was about six months, I think, for us to update those two forms. I'm not sure. I might be kind of mean. I'm not sure. I get stuff done pretty fast, and but I think with a vendor, you have to have, we have a vendor, and so I send them an email and say, I need these forms updated with these associated variables. Please tell me the cost, and I need it done by this date. And so it's worked fairly well for me. I mean, it's definitely not instant turnaround. I can't just add something tomorrow, but I don't think that we have a year. That being said, I don't think they like me very much, but sorry.
Right, well, that's sort of one of your costs of integrated systems is that, you know, everyone involved has a say in, you know, how you make your changes and when you can do them and when you can take your system down for testing and for piloting and, you know, when can you get your IT people on board, when can you get, you know, time from your vendor to help you, you know, do these different things. So the increasing dependence, it's both a blessing because, you know, we can get things done without, like, all this, you know, hundreds of data entry staff. On the other hand, you know, your dependence on it really can hold you up on things.
Can I just say one thing about, and then I'll, it isn't necessarily from a Florida perspective how long it takes. Let me just plant a little bug in your ear. It's never just simply a data element. These systems are complex reflections of business processes that are in place, and people who pass down this requirement or that requirement are not familiar with what's happening at the ground level and the implications of slight changes in the broader picture. So there is a complication here that when there are additional elements that are asked for, changes in forms, that means that business processes and applications have to change at the ground level. So it's just not adding a data variable to a data set. I think that's very important to remember, and I hope that CDC remembers that. Also, I find increasingly there is difficulty understanding clear definitions of what's being asked for, and oftentimes data elements are being duplicated without even the realization from Atlanta that it's happening. So from our perspective, it's very frustrating to sit there and be told to do something when we're already doing it in another area without an understanding of Atlanta that that's what's happening. So, and that's not being negative. It's just saying I think with all of us, with any system that you develop, there is a complexity here that you've got to recognize that we have taken on this responsibility for these systems. Therefore, dear colleague letters are great tools of communication, but don't expect 1 week turnaround times like they're saying. And understand it has to be taken in a larger context of a lot of partners at the local level, not just the SDD program.
I just have one more thing to add to that. When we were developing our data collection model, I remember very clearly sitting here going, okay, this is what the Bureau of HIV wants from us. This is what CDC NETS wants from me. This is what my local people want from me, and this is what the state wants from me. And very often it was the exact same question, but one wanted a 2-month time frame, one wanted a 12-month time frame, one wanted 3 months, and the other one wanted since 1978. And so in order to be able to answer that, I mean, I had to get the same question in my system 4 different ways to satisfy 4 different, groups out there and people who were giving us money and people who wanted things the way they wanted. That is excruciating. It's horrible for the data entry folks. It's horrible for, the DIS who are, trying to get the information. And it was horrible for us to try to, put it together in a system. I'll get over that one day. Yeah, well, I mean, I feel like we can stay as long as you can stay, but I actually shouldn't speak for anyone else. But, I mean, I think it's a worthy conversation, so.
Well, just sort of a dovetail with that and a question in the sense that I mentioned sort of California. I wouldn't call it fiasco because we are entering data. There's a lot of data accumulating now in our system. And what we had thought we were getting, or at least I did originally, was something where there was a lot of our, at least even program staff, but maybe IT staff could modify forms without going to the vendor. And there is some of that. There is some situations where forms can be modified internally. Certainly the values can be changed in forms to some degree, but it's a balancing act between what the vendor has control over and what we have control over, which is what we're finding out. Some of our very creative IT staff are increasingly, as they understand the stuff underneath, are themselves able to make those. So it doesn't require the, tens of thousands of dollars to add a period or something that it would cost to go to the vendor. Also, though, I'll say, to your point about the CDC needing the stuff, I mean, disease control is a local activity rather than a federal activity. And the notion of where the priorities are or should be, that's maybe a separate discussion, but just because it's a new disease, I mean, that it's in the trenches, folks, that you're dealing with. So CDC is usually, but needs to be cognizant of that, I would think, as well. But I don't know how your system, the relative ability, I mean, prison's a different story, but the ability of the vendor to change stuff versus the ability of your staff to change stuff.
I don't have any ability.
Well, that's easily one of the main reasons that Maven was chosen for New York City is that, we have fairly high-level technical folks who can do that. And at the agency level, they're making investments in that. And so we're getting people who are really very up to speed on that application. And and I know that, that's sort of the theory of at consilience is that, they don't want to also be dependent on having to, make all these changes for folks. And so we're still learning how to do that best for ourselves, but that was a major consideration.
Now, one thing in Pennsylvania that we implemented about 2 years ago was the ability for program to develop its own questionnaires. So we have a tool now, we can actually go in and program our own questionnaires. So that's the easy part. So once we have a questionnaire created, it has to go up through the food chain. That's where it gets bogged down because our BIT folks, Bureau of Information Technology folks, only have so much bandwidth. So after we develop it, we sit and we wait. And we wait until they get a window open to push that forward because it has to go through internal validation and everything else. So about 2 years ago, we developed that. So if you're developing your own system, that's a really important point is take ownership of the development of the questionnaires and try to take it out of the IT people as much as you can because you're going to be beholden to them at every turn.
Yeah. I don't. And when I see them, when I go and I'm visiting and there's the FRs printed out, I'm like, don't bring those out. But yes, no, they're still printing them out. And, you know, at first I was like upset about it, but then I realized that we have DIS that have been DIS for 30 years, and they need something to write on. And so, yeah, we have people still printing out FRs. Oh, no. Oh, no. They use it, I think, to work for their work. But once it's done and it's in the system, then they don't keep it. So there's no files. We're not filing anymore. I think they're printing off FRs or labs or an interview record while they're managing the case. But once everything's submitted and the field records are done and they're done with that case, no, we're not keeping paper files anymore. Our files are all backed up electronically, and we have a data retention policy through the system. Yeah. But, no, they are printing them out. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, we don't, and we don't have any paper review. All of the review is done. That's one of the good things is the pouch review, if you will, is really a strength of our system. So no paper is moved between supervisors and DIS. I think the DIS print out paper for their own workflow, for their own personal work needs, but no, it's not moved around anymore.
Now, we're trying to go to a paperless system. I put into our grant money to buy either an Android tablet or an iPad. Because we're envisioning is that there's no reason to have paper. Having an iTablet or an Android tablet out in the field with you makes all the sense, because you can pull up your record. If you get lost, it has the GIS capability right there. So
yeah.
It makes sense to do away with it. So we put it in our grant, and then actually CDC approved it. So cross my fingers that by September or November, thereabouts, we're going to start piloting either Android tablets or an iPad. I'm not sure yet which one we're going to go with, because the Android tablets are catching up really quickly. But it only makes sense to do away with paper.
The only caution I would give you is in the zeal to move to paperless, be careful about gaps in coverage for whatever wireless carrier you have. Florida, you would think, would have complete coverage, but there are huge gaps in Central Florida and rural areas where, in theory, it works great. You hit that gap, and then you've got no connectivity. So that's something outside of the system, but that's something to consider when you're talking about being paperless. You're a little hung by your carriers.
We also have, we're mostly paperless, but we haven't, you know, made the entire shift. But our DIS and our FLS, who were a little nervous at first about, you know, doing the pouch review and everything online, have turned out that they love it, because it is very clear the exact date that someone submitted it to someone else. And, you know, the notes are all in there, and you can open up one screen, and it's like, this case went from this person on this date to this person to this date and this person to that date, and with all the notes. And it prevents a lot of folks also from, you know, hiding things under the rug, and it makes, like, the supervisors much more happy and the staff more accountable. And, you know, we really like that function.
And I know this is seemingly very simple, but for those of you who have done this for a long time, for a supervisor, handwriting, the little tiny handwriting on the back of the FR is an issue. It really is. It's hard to read people's handwriting. They're scrawling notes, and I think something, people have said that to me. It's so much easier for me to review this and so quickly now that it's typed and date stamped and all, you know, it's, I think that's a real advantage to all these systems. Oh yeah. Yep, it's in the notes section.
Mm-hmm. One thing we tried to do was take as much of the things that would be in a narrative and actually make a question out of it, so that there is less narrative that folks would have to write. And we could also then actually analyze some of those things.
And we did the exact opposite. And I don't know which is better, because I read the narrative sometimes, trying to make sure that the variables are correct. So I'll read entire narratives. But they did not want more. You know, the syphilis IR is already so huge, and to add the narrative questions on the end of that would make that like a 20-page document. So they didn't want that. And so ours is a huge free text block. It's not analyzable. I read it. Certainly I read them, and I'm trying to fill in questionnaire, you know, pieces of information if they're missing. But yeah, ours read like the back. They want it to read like the back where they write out the whole narrative. That's how they want it to look.
Sure.
We're one of the states using the CDC developed net-based system. And there's been some noise recently about moving to an SD investigation module. But I was just wondering, maybe there are a few things I can learn from you guys' experiences about how these systems typically handle comorbid or concurrent diagnoses, and how much information is collected about exposures and how that's stored.
Yeah, New York grappled with that a lot. How do we deal with co-infections, and how do we deal with double data entry of information? And we have some solutions. They may not be the most elegant, but we do have them. And you know, Maven allows for copying of cases, and so you could, you know, maybe do all your information on one and then copy it and make it another disease and then, you know, change the information. You know, I really can't answer it without getting into like the excruciating details, but you know, there are ways of dealing with it. I would hope that someone can one day have a really good way of doing that.
But you brought a good point up. It is it sounds like a simple solution on the surface. That if you have gonorrhea and chlamydia, it makes sense just to do it one time. But all the things that happen to that report once it's entered in the system, the dual morbidity and everything else, it quickly becomes a spiral that you can't get yourself out of sometimes. So we're still struggling with it in Pennsylvania.
We built the functionality to have a comorbid entry option for a person that has gonorrhea and chlamydia at the same time, and that's as far as we've gone. And you can only do it at initial data entry. So if someone has gonorrhea and then you find out 3 days later they have chlamydia, you can't do it at that point. Then you have to create new. The demographics will still fill in, but the specifics of the patient visit will not. The person information will fill in from that master patient index, but we did it only for gonorrhea and chlamydia. So if a person has syphilis and gonorrhea, then you don't have that option. And I don't know if that's something we'll move to, but right now we're just kind of comfortable with that.
It sounds like a good work group to get together, because although our systems are different, the logic and the model would be exactly the same for the different programs. And I think having multi-brains looking at the same problem, maybe they'll come up with a solution, but man, go into a tailspin real quick trying to figure out all the permutations that are associated with comorbidity and risk and interview records and contacts and
and time frame. Is this really comorbidity, or you know, was it like, you know, 2 or 3 days later or something like that? Yeah, it's definitely a huge one.
But developing a logic model on that would really help crystallize what the process might be. And is that logic model where things get bogged down?
In Washington, we actually, on our case report form, you can have every disease all at once on the same case report form. And I'm a little intrigued because we've not had a problem with that. we've just, you know, you can check as many boxes and fill out different, I mean, there's a gonorrhea section, a chlamydia section, a syphilis section, and it's all in one case report. So I guess we're relying on the person doing that data entry for making that decision that it's comorbid rather than having a system algorithm to do that.
All to say that you've gone paperless, because in South Carolina, in my mind, as a former and still to some degree a DIS, unless you're documenting an interview with a client to an electronic device, you're not paperless.
Right. We agree.
In our mind. Mm-hmm. And what some of our folk have gotten wind of or are trying to do is go paperless, meaning enter directly into a device from an interview with no paper.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
Or, you know, the other thing they've said is, well, we'll let you carry a notepad in there, but as soon as you get through the interview, you need to stop somewhere and enter it into a device. But then what do you do with the paper? You can't throw it out the window. kid throw the trash. So carrying the paper back to a facility and entering it there, because you don't want to do it at a Starbucks because you got the paper on the table, somebody got cameras in the ceiling and all that. So just be careful on that. Well, we've gone paperless, so we're paperless.
One of the Android tablets does have a stylus now with it. So they're bringing that back, and that stylus, for all intents and purposes, could serve as a your handwriting and actually capture that in a digital format. So that's why we're looking at both iPad and some of the Android technologies out there.
So we've had this conversation. I'm only going to tell you that the one thing I think the programs have to come to grips with is how an interview is conducted, and I think until society reaches a point that there's a trust level that you just open up a device in front of me and ask me the most personal questions humanly possible, you're still going to need a piece of paper. Mm-hmm. So paperless is very contextual. You know, it's like, I don't think we're going to get there. I think people are afraid of the WikiLeaks issue, the whole thing around technology. When you're sitting there, even with pads, and start popping information, and it makes them uncomfortable. So the old school paper, I think you're right. That old notepad isn't going to go away.
Takes away from the essence of the interview.
Yeah.
Old school.
Absolutely.
You need to be eyeball on the person.
That's right.
Little tips, little body language,
that's
some
right.
little stuff.
That's right.
That you know they're lying because their eyes twitch. Preoccupied with their device, you let them see that.
And I think you're right, because when you go to your doc, I mean, I think the classic example, when you're sitting there and the doc has got you in the exam room, he or she never looks in your eye, but by God, they're clicking a mile a minute at every drop-down menu of every risk behavior. Do you smoke? Do you drink? How long have you not even talking to me, you know, and that's true. I think you're right. That's a good point. Paperless has its limitations. People is the business we're in, and we've got to stick with that as a focus and not let technology get in the way.
In Washington, we actually have one county that is probably pretty close to paperless. They do a lot of it. Most of their interviewing over the telephone. But that's mostly what they do. So I think there's a lot fewer field visits for some. So we have one county in particular that is about as close to paperless as I think you can get, just because their economy has pushed them to do almost primarily 100% telephone interview, and they do just direct entry into the system for that. So, it just depends on if people have the resources to keep doing field visits in that way, or if they move to these other shortcuts.
I'm not advocating it, but just think outside the box for a second. With the technologies that we have college kids now that are videotaping the professors in their lectures. I'm not advocating that during an interview, but the world is moving quicker than we can even realize. You have the ability now with the technology to even videotape the interview if you're so inclined. And I'm not advocating that, but just that's where the technology is going.
Right, but just even about that, though, to videotape an interview, you have to get permission from the person you're talking
sure.
to, and then when you tell them, well, this is confidential, you know, nobody... Doesn't even know about this, but I'm going to report.
I know, that's what I'm saying. But the technology is moving so fast that we need to come to the grasp with it.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I think that half an hour past the time would really wrap this topic to death. So thank you all very much. Thank you, everyone.
Nice walking. You gotta wash the wine.
That's true for another 5 minutes.
Hell yeah. You know, I heard this before.
Yeah.
How can I do that? And the answer I give is it's complicated. Messing things up. There's data structures and all sorts of other stuff.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to the next one.
my head, I can fall this all through. They put down that relevant work that day, it would be encrypted on the hard drive and have at least that so they don't have connection, it's still. And then on Google Maps now,